Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hey, Shireen.
Hello.
This is Anna, and this is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Today, we have a very special guest episode with Steve Hernandez.
Yeah, we do. And we talk a lot about religion and what religion means to us and basically his upbringing.
Being a youth pastor and finding comedy, but mostly we talk about religion and the spiritual journey that you go on. And we learn a lot about Steve, and it's a really good time. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Shireen.
How are you this fine Monday? We record on Monday and we release on Monday. FYI, that's a little nugget for you guys.
What a joy. I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. I woke up at 6 a.m. on the dot.
Wow.
They're doing,
why?
I don't know. There's multiple reasons.
Is your internal clock kind of strange right now?
No, my internal clock's usually 8 a.m., which I hate. Huh. I should be able to sleep in until like noon.
Yeah.
That's my personal preference, but I never do.
Of course.
But no, I just got up at 6 a.m. because of there was some they're redoing the roof of our apartment complex. It's just everything. Ace was like shaking in bed. That's my dog. Every little thing. Zach was like loud. I don't know. Everyone was like being annoying. And I woke up at 6 a.m. And I haven't been happy since.
That does sound like a Monday for you, though.
You know,
like hopefully tomorrow won't be a Monday. It won't. I mean, technically, it won't be. But yeah, I'm okay. Thanks for asking.
Yes, sorry. How are you doing?
I'm kidding. I was kidding. Sorry, I was kidding. I'm okay. I had an interesting day. It's very hot, and I had to get a bone density scan. I have like a complicated medical history we don't have to get into today, but I just have to make sure my bone density is doing okay because when I was 23. I broke my arm too easily and I had early onset osteoporosis. It's a whole thing. But I got my first one in seven years today.
How was it?
And going to the doctors in this current time is a very strange experience. Let me just tell you that. It is very strange and very anxiety inducing, regardless of COVID. But in addition to COVID, it's already kind of weird. But I did that. I got back. I had to go to the pharmacy and I thought I was being proactive and I got a flu shot. It was free. And then my sister informed me that you're not supposed to get the flu shot until later. And then you also informed me about that. I had no idea that that was a thing. I thought you just get a flu shot whenever they offer you a flu shot. I didn't know you had to wait until it got cold or like
there's
October,
like flu
November.
Shot seasons. I don't know. My doctor's always talking.
How does
at
everyone
me about
know
it?
This? I feel stupid now, but whatever. I have a fucking flu shot and I kind of feel dumb about it. But you know what? We're here. We're recording a podcast, and that was my Monday. My Monday was getting a flu shot without needing to. But we have a very special guest today, a guest that both Anna and I have been wanting on the show for quite a long time. Someone that I've never met in person, but I feel like I know him. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of those people that his internet presence is very familial. Do you feel that way?
Yes.
Like, you can connect easily to this person.
He recently posted something on Instagram, I think this past weekend, that really made me laugh. Yes, his presence on social media, very vibrant. I don't know.
It's just fun.
I know.
It's like he's just a friendly presence. And I like, it's entertaining to me. So anyways, today joining us without any further introduction is Steve Hernandez.
Yeah.
AKA Hernia.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Also, your handle makes me laugh.
Which one?
Hernia.
Hernia's Instagram, Big Hern on Twitter. I can't believe I got Hernia on Instagram.
Honestly, me neither.
It's usually gone so fast and everything, it's gone. Someone always takes it, but I got it, baby, and no one could take it from me.
No one can take that from me.
You're Hernia.
Anna, 6 a.m., throw in the towel. You should have canceled this, man.
I did consider it, but I saw a text from Shireen at like 7 a.m., which I will admit I did not respond to until 10 a.m. because I like was emotionally not ready to deal with
anything.
I don't have anything.
I don't care. Yeah.
But I was like in that second when I saw your text, I was like, should I cancel? And I was like, no, that would be weak. I can't do it. I felt like my pressure of the world. Yeah, I was like, I can, whatever. Like,
we could have a conversation with Steve.
Well, I'm going to try to make it worth your while then, Anna. I'm going to try to like bring you joy and laughter right now in this time. But I would have canceled. If I know those times where you just wake up in the morning and it's like the day's over. I don't know if you guys were upset as I was about the, obviously, I'm sure you were, about the Jacob Blake stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So that was one where... so I did the mail, one of my podcasts, I finished up around 8:30 or 9, and then I saw that and it just like ruined my night. Not as bad as of course his life or his family's life or anything, but it was just like, oh man, this hurt. And I told Julia, my lover, my partner, I said, we got to get something to eat right now. And she's like, what should we get? I was like, I don't know, but I want to hurt myself.
I get that.
And so we went to In-N-Out and, it's fine. It's really tragic. But that like effed up my sleep stuff too. So
yeah,
I understand. Yeah.
I will admit, yes, I don't usually eat. Like I do the keto diet during the week because I have like old Persian grandma genes that like I just fall out of shape immediately. I mean, honestly, what am I even doing anymore? I'm just like, don't eat. I'm just trying to eat vegetables and I call it the keto diet. I'm just trying to be healthy.
That's healthy. Yeah.
But last night I fell into a bit of an emotional hole reading the news. There was some other stuff going on and I got Taco Bell and that shit fucked me up all night as well. I think another reason I woke up at 6 a.m. because my stomach was just not having it.
We all had some interesting food days yesterday.
What did you eat?
My parents drove up to visit my older sister. She just moved in with her now husband into a new apartment. And so my parents drove up after we've all been distancing and stuff like that. But we kind of met up at my sister's apartment and they brought up kebabs and falafel and this amazing pita bread from this place nearby where they live. And I don't eat meat or cheese. So I just had like falafel ad nauseum with like hummus and pita bread. And I also brought, because my sister's birthday was a couple days ago, I brought her this vegan carrot cake and it was so good. But I don't really eat sugar on a daily basis. Mm. And I've realized since I've like cut out sugar from my daily life, if I have a lot of it, I kind of become comatose. Like I'm just like,
oh yeah,
I'm just a shell of a human. But I love sugar so much. But in addition to this, like all the fried stuff and everything, like it was a great food day. I'm not going to deny that. But it wasn't a regular day for me. And by the time I got home, I just passed out immediately. I was like, I've eaten way too much, too many things today. But yeah, it is interesting how we cope with stuff. Like I think when I got back home, because I was kind of like in family land and I didn't hear about Jacob Blake until I was home by myself. And there's no words to really describe like the tragedy that and the frustration that surrounds that event. And I feel like what I end up doing is just like screaming into the void of social media. And it kind of makes me feel better. But at the same time, it's just like, this shouldn't be happening still. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think all we can do is just like keep trying our best to keep going and like do our part any way we can. And whether that's posting on social media or raising awareness, I relate to you, Steve, on coping through food, because I think that's very relatable.
It was that we had a rough week. We finally did a deep dive on I have kind of like a horny news podcast called The Male Gaze. Mm-hmm. And we finally did a QAnon deep dive this week. Mm-hmm. And that's really sad too.
Yeah.
So I literally just finished recording that and I saw the Jacob Blake stuff. And you're right. There's just like, we're just hope. I just felt kind of hopeless at that point.
Yeah.
Look at these poor listeners. They're here for fun. And we're just talking about all these terrible things.
It's been less than 10 minutes and we are sad, everybody. We are sad.
Guys, it's the state of the world. We have to do what we have to do. We got to talk about what's going on.
I am looking forward to my dad's coming over tonight. He sees no one. He leaves his house not at all. Mm. I have to make all these disclaimers, but he's coming over and we're going to watch the Laker game and then we're going to watch Hamilton.
Oh, yes.
So I'm excited about that.
Your father loves Hamilton.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Hates Trump, though.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. And I told him, you got to come over on Monday, and I want to show you Hamilton. I like Hamilton. I love Hamilton. I know everything that's wrong with it, but I love it, too. And I'm like, I've gone into some deep, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda dives too. I mean, he's just the corniest guy in the world.
Oh my God.
But I mean, yeah, he's terrible, but I love this musical.
Wait, were you the one that posted that, like, the improv scene?
Yes. Or
like, okay, yeah. That was insane. Like the scene with his improv troupe. Cause I'm okay. Oh, I will admit I'm not like a Hamilton person. If anything, Lin-Manuel Miranda kind of annoys me, but I didn't know this. I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast or just to Anna individually, but when I was visiting San Diego, my parents' house a couple weeks ago, I heard my mom singing Hamilton like by herself in the kitchen. And I went downstairs and I was like, have you ever seen Hamilton? And she was like, no, but I love the music. This is my second time listening to it through. Like, it's so fun. And so what I did, because we don't have Disney Plus, is I downloaded it illegally and we watched it together. And I reluctantly watched it because I had no desire to watch it. But I can see why it's catchy. I still think deep down in my heart of hearts that it's like a camp counselor with too big of a budget. My interpretation is the camp counselor taking over the camp talent show. And that's Hamilton.
Yeah,
but I will say
he's a nerd. He's corny.
He's a nerd.
Yeah.
And like the one thing I really appreciate about it, though, is the platform it gave to a lot of Black singers and performers. Like that I will give credit to. Like that was, for me, that was the highlight of the whole thing. I just think he miscast himself. So
he's the worst singer out of the whole bunch. Everybody else is so good compared to him.
Yeah, he's the weakest link. It's interesting.
Yeah. We'll see. I told him, I said, Dad, you got to come over. He's like, I don't want to see that. And I was like, why?
It is very long.
He said, it's a musical. And I was like, Dad, every music I've ever introduced you to, you've absolutely loved. When I was 13, I asked him to take me to go see Phantom of the Opera. They said you could get whatever you want for your 13th birthday. And so we went to the Amundsen and we saw the Phantom of the Opera, him and my mom. And then he took me to the Pantry. Have you guys been to the Pantry?
Mm-mm. No.
It's like one of LA's longest. It's like a diner. It's right near the Staples Center, but it was famous before COVID to never have closed in like 100 years. So it's this really great diner. But I remember we went to see Phantom, and we took that. My dad like absolutely loved Phantom of the Opera, and he's from like the white fence, like gang neighborhoods and stuff like that. So he'd never seen anything like that, and he was like, "Man, this is awesome."
I mean, the music in that is superb. Like, I'm not a musical person, like, by nature, but I do think Phantom of the Opera has some sick-ass, like, beats. Like, it has some good music.
Sick-ass beats.
It does. It has, like, good organ, and, like, it's really, like, the bit. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Anyway, okay. Let's shut up about musicals a little bit. Unless you want to talk about how much you love musicals. But I want to talk about you.
Yes.
So let's rewind. Tell the audience, where did you grow up?
I was born and we lived in Lincoln Heights, Highland Park area till I was about 4 years old, 5 years old. I went to kindergarten in West Covina. So my parents moved us out. I remember I think we had like a 2-bedroom place and I had 2 brothers at the time. So this was like a real big deal to move to West Covina. Now it's a little more integrated, but that was like your movie to the suburbs. We're moving to a white neighborhood. This is like the best thing we could do. So I grew up in West Covina all the way. I stayed in West Covina till I was about 22. Then I moved to Covina, just a city over. And then finally I moved to Pasadena in LA, like, you know, in the past 10 years or something like that.
Wow. So you've been in LA this whole time, or like LA area.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't have ever left Covina. That would have been my goal, to never have left Covina. I loved it so much. But my wife at the time got a job in Pasadena and I was just bartending. And so I said, well, I don't want you to drive an hour each way. There's no reason for it. So we'll just move there. And that put me close enough to LA so that I could start doing comedy. If you grew up around here, we didn't go, even West Covina is not that far. It's like 35 minutes from my house with no traffic. But if you grow up in like the suburbs, going to LA, we would just come here for concerts. But the idea of moving here, there's no way in hell I would have ever moved here just because of the parking alone.
The parking alone. Yeah, that's facts. I let's go back even further. Where are your parents from?
Yeah.
My dad was born in Ohio. They moved here when they were little kids to L.A. My mom, too, like off of Soto Street. I forget what they call it now. My grandma's house is still there. My dad went to Lincoln High School, so very East LA. But it, we would exit Soto Street to go to my grandma's house. He also worked there for a long time. But my mom got pregnant with my older brother when she was 15. She met my dad when I think my dad around the neighborhood. And then they got married when I believe he was 20. So maybe she was like 18, too. So we are Mexican. OK, everything I just said to you could not get any more Mexican than that.
Hey, well, is what it is.
Was the neighborhood that you grew up in pretty like Mexican-American, too?
In West Covina?
Yeah, I guess were you surrounded by a lot of people that looked like you and spoke like you, or was it kind of like...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I bet, this was probably like 84, 83, 85, something like that. So I think a lot of I think at the time a lot of probably Mexicans were like, this is how we make it. This is how what we have to do. My dad was able to do that because he was in the army through the GI Bill by a house out there.
Oh, nice.
And I do think it was probably like the first generation. There was a lot of Mexicans. I think even now West Covina, Covina is like probably like 40% white, 40% Mexican. And then, blacks and Asians. Mm-hmm. But it is like where whites and Mexicans go to have babies, basically.
Oh, I don't know that. I don't know. I've been to West Covina a few times. I actually got this tattoo right here in West Covina.
Oh.
Because this guy.
Where at? Just some guy?
I forget where it was. It was some tattoo shop, and it was like a friend of a friend. And we went after hours, and he was giving them tattoos. And I was like, well, you know what? Throw one on
That's
me.
That's how it goes. Yeah.
And he was like, okay, lady. And I don't know. He was weird. But. That's where you go.
West Covina. Yeah, West Covina was, I think it's now, I think the Mexicans, we have slowly taken over Covina too. Because even growing up, I remember Covina was more white. Mm-hmm. But now, I bartend at a place called the Chatterbox where I have my comedy show as well. Right. And it's basically just Mexican and white again too. So I never really felt like othered at all. I saw brown faces everywhere I looked.
Yeah.
And a lot of the cops are Mexican and everything too. So I think it's very second and third generation Latino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious how your dad got to Ohio originally, mm-hmm. to be born in Ohio.
That I don't know. My grandma is from Texas.
Okay.
I'm like second or third generation. And then they went to Ohio, and then they came here. But I my grandma would tell us, she's not alive anymore, but my grandma would tell us they would follow the things. So they were like migrant laborers. So
right.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting experience because I think so many people view Mexican Americans as like immigrants and like as, I mean, or just like not like American enough, but like you grew up around everyone that looked like you, like your city was like people that comprised of Mexican Americans, if not just like Mexicans. So I don't know. I think I think that upbringing is kind of is nice to just not ever feel like you're out of place. Cause like that's, you should never feel like that as a Mexican American, and especially not in California. But was there ever a sense of like, when you would go to the city, do you ever feel othered? Or like when you went into like to go to concerts or whatever, was it kind of like a point of pride to be from a very Mexican American place?
No, absolutely not. But I will backtrack a little and tell you, I did grow up at like a mega church. It grew as I got older. It's where I was eventually a pastor at, but that was like, I grew up mostly around white people.
Oh.
So as much as I was going to school and seeing other Mexicans and stuff, the church I went to and like some of my closest friends were all white people. So I was in like both worlds. I just didn't feel any way about it, I don't think, but there was like very white stuff. And I think when I say white too, I'm talking about, economically too, so that I use those things a lot very interchangeably. But some of my closest friends growing up in church were better off, and they had like healthy home lives. My home life wasn't that good. We had a lot of trauma and abuse and stuff like that. Everything's a lot better now, and everyone's doing pretty well now. But my parents were struggling when we were growing up because they came from so much trauma. So but I don't know how much race played a part in it. I do feel like I did. I voted for Bob Dole when I turned eight, when I was 18. So I was very Republican when I grew up that way. Oh. I think that's just because I was very Christian. So the idea of like you just work hard and keep your nose clean and everything will like come to you. I really had that. And still, even I think now, even though I've shed so much of that, but I do think that I really grew up with that, like very, very strongly.
I'm sorry. My dog just vomited like right underneath me. Can we take one quick, I just need to like clean this up. I'm sorry. It's like stinks a little. And that's kind of why I've been like, kind of like interacting. Like,
yeah. This will be our first commercial break. So okay. We'll be right back. BRB. And we're back with Steve. Ace is cleaned up. Anna is back.
Yes, sorry about that. Ace had an accident. He had too much human food.
Yeah.
There was like corn in his...
I hope he feels okay.
There was corn in his diary, and I was like, when did you eat corn?
I mean, relatable, but yeah.
When did you get corn?
That's really weird.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know.
Anyways, I'm glad he's okay, and hopefully his tummy feels better. But Steve, let's talk about you. You mentioned that you got into comedy after your partner at the time, you moved over here to LA kind area. Of like make it easier on your relationship. Were you interested in comedy as a kid growing up, or was it really something you found later in life?
No, not really. You know, as much as anybody likes comedy when they're a kid, but I used to be, when I was a youth pastor, I was a funny youth pastor. So I was, before I quit, I was on the fast track to like making pretty good money with other mega churches and big evangelical stuff, like going to camps, going to like a winter camp and getting paid like thousands of dollars to do like four sermons, like some other church's sermon. So I would be the guest. So I knew like the same place I write jokes from now is the same place I would get sermons from. I used to call it the Holy Spirit. I don't call it that anymore, but it was like pretty much the same thing. So I was going to school, and I had a friend named Scott Lors who runs the Chatterbox with me still, and he started doing comedy. I went to a show, I saw him, and I said, I guess I'll just give that a shot. But there, like, I cannot emphasize to you enough, if I did not live in Pasadena, I would have never did that. The idea of driving to Los Angeles for an open mic, it would have never happened, not on my watch, not ever. It would have never happened. And even Pasadena, now when you're a comic or something like that, you're used to wasting your time and your hours and anything. But back then I was a regular person and I valued my time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so all of those things had to happen for me to get into stand-up comedy.
That's interesting.
Did you grow up with Scott?
No. Scott went to APU. It's a Christian college in Azusa, right next to Covina. Uh-huh. And his roommate at the time, a guy named Travis, who still bartends at the Chatterbox on Sunday nights when we have the show, he worked with me at TGI Fridays. TGI Fridays was my glory days, guys. Just getting drunk for like 5 years. Doing ecstasy, just having a great time. And I knew Scott from that. But then he went away. He came back. I started podcasting because of Adam Carolla about 11 years ago. And I was just interviewing friends. And I remember at some point Scott lived in L.A. because he was trying to be a comic. And I interviewed him. And he told me about it. And I was like, oh, maybe this is something I should give a shot to.
Wow. Yeah.
What got you into being, you say you're a pastor or a minister?
A youth pastor.
A youth pastor. Yeah. What got you into that?
There was a neighbor lady who took us to VBS. You guys know what VBS is?
No.
Vacation Bible School. Oh. They have it every summer. It's like a week where you just drop off your kid or the neighborhood kids. It's really everything with the evangelical church is to trap people and get them to come into the church. So this is a week where you trap the kids with the programming and the kids make the parents come to church. And then hopefully the family starts going. And that's exactly what happened to us.
Whoa.
They trapped
you. But it was something you were really invested in. Like, are you still, is religion still a big part of your life, or has that kind of phased out?
It's becoming more so again. I have a podcast with Amy Miller called Who's Your God, where we interview comedians about their religious experiences and stuff. But I do feel like I'm tapping into something again since Black Lives Matter stuff started. So I think the American, especially the white American evangelical church, is dead. It's dying on the vine, and they're for the most part pretty terrible. But that's the kind of church I came from too. But being at all these Black Lives Matter stuff and hearing all the different black women speak about God and everything. I have not felt the presence of God like this in my life in, I don't know, 20 years, close to 20 years. So it is, yeah. I am exploring those things in my own personal life. And I think I might start reading the Bible again and see what it looks like. I don't think it's perfect or anything, but I think it would be interesting to have an adult mind and try to attack that thing from this point of view now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. I think I also think it's interesting to think of you being a youth pastor as the first time you like took, like you had center stage. Like you were kind of like, as much as religion is important to you, the fact that you were a funny youth pastor kind of like informs me of like you, like it was like a merging of your, what you liked, like whether that was like expressing yourself and being like a entertainer and then something really spiritual. I think that's a very fascinating union.
Oh, yeah. And I tricked those kids. I want you to know I tricked those kids when they gave their life to Christ. I would just tell funny stories. I was like a very funny youth pastor. And then near the end, I would just be like, you guys ever get lonely? You know, stuff like that.
You were a scammer. You scammed them into religion.
Dude, religion, evangelical Christianity is the biggest scam in the world. 100%. Dude, when I worked there, this is 2017. It might close to 20 years ago, probably. Mm-hmm. When I was there, our weekly offering, when I left, they were at about 13,000 people in attendance.
Oh, wow.
So every weekend, 13,000 people would go through there. And I think our offering at the time was $120,000 a week, something
Holy
like that.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so this is big business. That same church, I know that the pastors, they continue to get worse and worse. Jim Reeve was a great teacher, probably still is, but they like don't give a shit about it. They were white, and then the church became increasingly like more and more Mexican with Covina and West Covina. And I know now that they have a house in Newport Beach, and they basically just come in for the services.
I mean, this all sounds like and reminds me of the Righteous Gemstones. Right. Does it remind you of the Righteous Gemstones, Anna?
Yeah.
It's not unlike that, although our church was more Pentecostal when I was younger. So when we were younger, we definitely had more speaking in tongues in public. We definitely had more.
What does that mean per se? Wait, can you get into that a little bit? What do you mean?
You don't know what speaking in tongues is?
But like, what do you mean in public? Like, what do you mean? Like,
okay, well, there's in Christian theology, there's something called the four square religion or denomination. That's a very popular denomination. But in the Bible, the book of Acts says that proof that the Holy Spirit lives in you will come when you speak in tongues. But there's also different parts of the Bible that say you shouldn't do it in public unless someone there has the gift of interpretation. So that if there's someone there, otherwise it'll like, in the Bible it says, otherwise it'll distract people. So I remember, I actually remember one of the last times, I must've been in junior high when it happened, because we used to have an old like white woman who would say like, who would have the gift of interpretation. And so we'd be speaking in tongues, you know, and doing it. And then this like prophet white woman would get up on stage and she would say like, I know, like I've got a word from God, what God's saying right now.
Whoa.
And I remember one time, and it was always very like Old Testament shit too, like very like ye said this, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think she was a little too hell and brimstone. And I mean, this church made like a deliberate, because it wanted to become a mega church and more successful and not get pigeonholed. The pastor is brilliant in a lot of ways. So he made deliberate steps. But I remember she said stuff like that. And he said, you know, I just want to say, I don't accept that word, that wasn't from God. I remember being in church and that happened. And it was like, oh shit, like what's happening right now?
Whoa.
So that kind of thing. The more Pentecostal churches, the more they do with that wacky shit. But the more successful you get, it ends up becoming like, you don't even really want to talk about the Bible that much. Like Joel Osteen's church is like, you could almost like, it's barely Christian at all. It's more like human empowering and stuff like that.
Interesting.
That's interesting. I don't know a lot about these kinds of churches.
Yeah, me
either. Because I was raised in Islam.
We were both raised Muslim, me and Anna. So
yeah. But, you know, it makes me think of like the Falwells, which I believe the Falwells are who the Gemstones are based off of.
Oh, really? They're based off of real people?
Yeah, the Falwell family. But I just thought it was funny that today it came out that Jerry Falwell Jr., is that his name? I think he's the junior, was having an affair with their longtime business partner, and he was just basically like cuckolding himself. So I was just like, okay, like,
yeah, they had like a three-way relationship, and he liked to watch this. They met him. He was the pool boy at the beginning, but he likes to watch them have sex. So he just had to resign from the board at Liberty College. That's a big college, I believe, in Tulsa. I could be wrong, but he had to resign from the board last week or 2 weeks ago, and then today it all dropped that. He's trying to blame it on extortion, but he just liked to watch his wife get fucked. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I was like, who cares? Like,
we all have whatever quirks. Yeah.
It's just because he's a hypocrite. That's the only reason why it's a
big
deal.
Right, yeah. I mean, like, the reason why I brought the righteous gemstones is because thinking of religion as a business, that's a very interesting. I mean, we all know that a lot of organized religion is kind of scammy, but at that level, it becomes it's a lot of money you're dealing with. And only if a select amount of people actually are profiting at that point, right? Like,
well, of course. And it's so funny because his son, I don't know what's going on with him. I have a lot of friends that stayed on to be ministers, and eventually all of us left. Mm-hmm. And so now we have, at least on Christmas Eve, at least once a year, we all get together, a bunch of guys, like five guys, and we go to a diner. We go to Rod's in Arcadia near the Santa Anita, and we just talk to each other for like 4 or 5 hours and like catch up. A lot of them are still believers. I think I might be the only one who's not, but they're all good guys, and they like know who I am, and they're still friends with me. So they got to be pretty good guys, I think.
Do you remember if there was like a shift in you that you decided like you're not a believer anymore, or was like a gradual thing?
Oh no, it took up my 20s. It took 6-7 years. And like I said, it's still like an ongoing thing for me, when I decided to quit, I'd started drinking. So I started getting like drunk sometimes and like by myself because I couldn't go to a bar or anything. And I was having sex with like my girlfriend at the time. And those two things enough were like, and I really love God. And I was like, I don't want to be the kind of pastor. And the workload I had and how many people I had under me at like 23 years old was like, I just knew, I was like, this isn't right. And so that's kind of why I quit. Uh-huh. And I didn't expect them, but it makes sense to me now, because I was so savvy to the business side of it. But they asked me not to go to that church for a year. Oh. And that was like, you know, I was going there since I was 7 years old.
Wait, what do you mean? Why would they say that to you? Because,
well, I know why they would say it to me, because I had like such a huge following, and they had no power over me if they weren't paying me anymore.
Oh, okay. So they didn't want you to corrupt anybody.
Yeah, they didn't want me to corrupt anybody or anything like that. The real fucked up thing about this is the Bible says if someone's sinning, they should go in front of the congregation and tell them that. They didn't tell the kids, or I had 50 adult volunteers under me too. They didn't tell the kids or anybody that this is what was going on. They just said that I wanted to go back to college. So I was leading this full on hard charging ministry with all these different sectors. I was the high school pastor, the college pastor, I had a junior high pastor, but we had like 20 or 30 adult volunteers in each of the segments. My high school class had 300 people in it. We had this huge like student leadership, and then I was just gone 1 week. And that I think really fucked with the kids. Mm-hmm. And if I could take anything back, I don't blame myself. I think I did the right thing for leaving, but if I could take something back, it would have been to communicate to them where I was coming from. But yep.
Damn. That's crazy how they just like rip the rug out from underneath you and are like, get out. You're not with us anymore.
It's like, I know. Whoa. And I was like, I mean, I do feel very sorry for that guy when I think about him, because I wasn't savvy enough at the time. I should have made a bunch of different plans if I knew what I was going to do. But I just really loved God, and that's why I was a minister. And everything for quitting was to be close and to get right with God. And that's just not the game they were playing.
Yeah.
And so if I could go back, I would have done like a few things like so much differently, and it would have been far healthier. And I probably actually could have helped some people and everything. Yeah. But that kind of made that just made me spin out for like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, obviously, there's no use in and dwelling on that kind of stuff and like what you could have changed, but you did the best you could. And it's so ironic that was you trying to, because like you would think that loving God would be enough, you know, you would think that would be that's what religion is, like that's enough for you to reconcile like this conflict within yourself. But that just goes to show that like a lot of organized religion isn't interested in how you actually feel. It's just what you can do for them. You know what I mean? So, and how you can help them further their own narrative. Yeah.
And they were nice to me too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the senior pastor's daughter is like my first love and my first girlfriend and my first kiss. I heard she's getting a divorce now. Julie, if you're listening to this, give me a call. Let's catch up. But they were nice to me, but I was also like, it was a predominantly like Mexican congregants. It was becoming more so. I was like the only Mexican on staff. So they really wanted to keep me too. I came from such a shitty place that there was no way I didn't even understand. Like if I was a, you know, let's just call this like politics. If I would have understood my position then and been as smart as I am now, I would have worked things so differently, but I just wasn't smart enough at the time. So they really want, when I tried to quit, they didn't let me quit at first because they were like, you're very good what you do. You just need some rehabilitation, you know? And so I went and lived in Ecuador for a few months and I worked at an orphanage and they thought that like me not sinning or something would be okay, but I got back and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so then they told me not to come back for a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did your family feel about it?
Yeah.
It was pretty fucked up for my family too. My mom's still a pretty crazy Christian. It was hard for my brothers and sisters. I had a pretty popular, we were gonna get signed by Interscope. Pretty popular Christian hip hop band.
Really? What?
Yeah.
What was it called?
Get Down Voltron.
Get Down Voltron.
Yeah. And it was me, my younger brother, and my younger sister. And we had a live band.
Wow.
And we would tour places and like we were getting close to signing with them too. So, I mean, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff, when I quit, I had to pull the plug on that with the band. With those guys in my band are some of the guys I still see. I still love them dearly. But I had to pull the plug on that. And that kind of spun everybody out. My brother and sister, in terms of religion, it kind of fucked with them too. But everybody's doing okay right now. That was just one of the things. Yeah.
But so your whole family sounds like it was very religious. So you being a youth pastor, were your other siblings involved in like the church in that way? Or were you kind of like the most into it?
I was paid, so I was the most into it, but they were all super into it.
Yeah.
My sister still would probably call herself a believer, but she's like far more progressive. She's more like, what's her name? Glennon, whatever, all the stuff she puts out, like Untamed and Love Warrior, like loves gays, loves all this stuff. And she's like still like that. My mom, her and I, we have lunch once a month and talk about God for 6 hours.
A nice conversation about God, or is it more like
sometimes heated? She does good. I'm very grateful for both my parents. My dad was abusive growing up, and my mom was kind of a shell of a person because of the abuse. My mom's very vibrant now, and my dad, you know, my dad said he was sorry for a few years. I mean, you know, he let us yell at him for a few years, and then after like a few years, I'm like, well, I don't know how long I'm going to yell at this guy for, and so we have like a healthy relationship now. So when I talk to my mom is always trying to grow. And I think because she wants to stay close with us. And I remember like 15 years ago, she called like a gay person a pervert. And I said, Mom, if you say, or like she called gay people perverts. I said, Mom, if you say that again, I'm going to have to leave. And she said it and I left. And now we could have these conversations. And she knows she's trying her best to love gay people and understand. Although I know in her head, it's like rough for her. She's a Mexican grandma. But she talks and, you know, I don't know if I have a relationship with God. I don't have one, like, according to the Bible. I don't believe in any being, but I very much, my conscience and the thing I used to call the Holy Spirit, I very much try to live my life by that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, so when I'm talking to my mom, I just code switch. I call that thing God. And we are talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, everything I stand for is because of this thing I call God. And it's not that much different, except in terms of abortion and gays and stuff like that, where my mom, we're talking about the same thing. Right. And she allows me to do that. And I think that's very sweet. And it's, you know, it's how I can have a relationship with her. And I'm very grateful for that, because I know a lot of people's religious moms don't allow them that.
Yeah. Let's take one last break and we'll be right back with more Steve Hernandez. And we are back. What a spiritual journey that we've all been on. It's interesting to hear, because I think you're right. Before the break, you mentioned, like, when you say God, it's not as literal as other people view it as, but it's really the same thing. It's a very personal thing. And I think that's what all religion and all spirituality should be. It's a very personal thing.
Well, you know, whoever came up with the word God just came up. All words were just to describe this feeling or this phenomenon. So we because people have overused it, and they think of one thing when they hear that word. I have no problem saying God now and knowing what it means to me. I know that for a lot of people, especially out in Hollywood and the entertainment industry, they might think that something. But yeah, I call it God for myself, and it's. You know, it is this weird fucked up thing. It doesn't, you know, I don't think God wants much to do with the entertainment industry right. because of how exploitive the whole thing is all. But in terms of me telling stories and doing comedy and doing podcasts, I mean, it drives everything I do. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I, you know, like growing up, my mom is very devout Muslim and my dad is like, fuck everything secular. And I feel like I wouldn't be doing this show if I wasn't raised watching my mom like have to like be a Muslim woman in like a very progressive society in the Bay Area, which I was raised, which is like this weird. It was like watching her morph into like a progressive Muslim woman, which is like a weird thing to say, considering how devout Muslim she is, was like very fascinating for me, because I'm like, she made it her own thing. And I can make it my own thing, even though, like, when I was younger, I just didn't understand it. And, like, the Quran was really scary for me. And it just felt so strict and intense. And, like, my dad was, like, this weird wino. If you tried to talk to him about religion, he would just get all fucking, like, crazy. Like, I talk to your mom. And you'd be like, oh, fool, like, what is your problem? So, like, I had such weird ideas of Islam that, like, I wouldn't like, I feel like we started the show to kind of like explore ourselves and everything else. And like, it's been, I mean, I feel like it's opened me up a lot more to understanding like what my mom went through and how like religion.
Well, yeah, you're right. Like we
affected everything.
Like, I think growing up, I was raised Muslim. Both my parents are Muslim. My entire family is extended is Muslim. And my dad's side in particular is strict. But growing up, I never felt Muslim enough. All my qualms about religion were because I wasn't good enough. I wasn't, like, I had no right to call myself a Muslim if I wasn't an actual believer. And as I grow up and I'm really valuing the morals that were left on me after being raised this way, I'm realizing that I identify with the culture of Islam the same way as like a Jewish person has a culture and a religion of Judaism. I think the same applies to Islam and a lot of other religions. I think there's a culture of being Muslim that I really am proud of, and it's a part of me whether I like it or not. And even though I don't really believe in God anymore, I think Anna's right. This podcast has kind of helped us like evolve in our relationship to ourselves and what that meant to us, and like we're understanding what our parents went through, and understanding people's connection to religion is a coping mechanism sometimes, or it's their way of holding on to a culture the best way they know how. And I used to get really uncomfortable talking about religion. Like it used to be something I wasn't comfortable delving into because I felt like because I hated it so much. And I didn't understand why God, I refused to believe that God existed because there was so much suffering in the world. And as I'm getting older and I'm not being as angry or like outwardly angry all the time. Yeah, it's a conversation that I think, especially framing it in a very spiritual way, it doesn't make it as like cut and dry. It's not about God existing or not existing. It's about that feeling that you feel when you enter a space. Like I feel it when I'm in nature, and I feel it when I'm like, I can't explain like something that happened in my life, but I don't know if that's God. I think in my heart, I don't think it's God, but I also think there's something bigger out there that I can't explain, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, we can't explain half this shit. So yeah, I don't mind using the word God or that thing as a filler for the thing. Yeah. And hopefully science explains it one day. Maybe it doesn't. That's funny. You're talking about that. The way you feel culturally, I never felt Mexican enough because I don't speak Spanish, but I'm very culturally Christian, evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. And so when I meet other people who have grown up as evangelicals, that is like, that's my shit. Like, yeah. I know everything. Worship songs, particular shows, even talking about, I can make some like hardcore Old Testament, like Bible jokes. And like, people are like, oh, like if you get that joke, it's like, and then I'm like, oh, you're my brother. I love that shit.
That's funny.
No, I think it's true. I think a lot of religions are both a culture and a religion. And I think we focus on it being a Jewish thing, but I think it's a lot of other things. Like, I'm not religiously Muslim anymore. I wouldn't consider myself a believer of that. But culturally, I also call myself a Muslim. And I'll be proud of that because it is a huge part of my identity, whether I like it or not. I was just raised with a lot of Muslim in me.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because the two, you know, if we're using Christianity and Islam, so far at this point, they haven't allowed for any like, they haven't allowed for you to be an atheist Muslim.
There's no nuance. Right.
Yeah. Jewish people, even you go to temple, it's like, we're Jewish. You come to temple. I don't care if you believe in God or not.
Yeah.
So, but I hope that'll change. You know, even when I'm talking about my evangelical friends that I hang out with and we text and everything, they know that I don't believe in Christ the way they do at all. And if we find people in all these major religions that begin to understand, oh, Steve and Shireen are, they're good people. They're basically following the God that we're following. They just don't like calling it that.
Yeah.
Then you begin to allow for that kind of thing that Judaism allows for at this point.
It's interesting how people take it in. Cause like I have a brother who's older than me and he is kind of terrifying. And he, you know, growing up, obviously we were both raised in Islam, but like he was always like the troublemaker. He was always in trouble. Like, I don't know. I'm very fascinated by like how you come and go from religion. And like my brother was in prison for a while and he joined the Nation of Islam because he's like, I have to, you got to, like you're in prison. And I don't, you know, whatever, prison rules. I don't know exactly. Like my brother could explain it better, but I will never have him on this podcast because you guys will be like, who the fuck is that? Terrifying man. But he joined Nation of Islam because that's kind of like who he went towards. Cause he's like, well, I grew up in Islam. And then like when he came out and he's out now and he's whatever living his life, but like him and my mom are so much closer and they do like Quran study together every Friday. And it's like this kind of fascinating thing because it's like if you saw him in person, you'd be like, that guy is scary because he's kind of intense and, you know, he's buff and, you know, he has a vibe to him where you're like, you're not going to look at him and be like, that man believes in God, you know?
You keep saying scary, but he's sounding sexier and sexier.
Oh, yeah.
Than me,
I mean, so. Maybe you. You'd like him.
Yeah.
But he's like the type of person where he'd be like, hood vibes. Like, he can be kind of gangster. He dresses a certain way. And I don't want to like label my brother as like a gangster because he's not. He's not a gangster. He was raised in a privileged Iranian American household. He just also happened to be very shady growing up because he was running with certain crowds.
Right.
But he'll be the type of person where you're like at the table and he's like talking to you. He'll be saying some shit like, yeah, this motherfucker, he is crazy. I don't fuck with him anymore because he's actually crazy. And then like we'll flip and be like, and you know, in this verse in the Quran, you have to remember, and this is how he talks. I'm sorry to do this sort of like accent, but he'd just be like, remember to, you know, don't bite the hand that feeds you. And it's like all this stuff. And that's just like his whole aesthetic. And you're like, what? Like, you're a Muslim man?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you want to judge people so off the bat. It's like, you don't know their story. You don't know how they got there. Like,
yeah,
he left and came back so many times that it's like, but that's who he is. Like, if you asked him to his face, he'd say, yes, I am a practicing Muslim. But like, if you saw him on the street, you'd be like, fuck that guy. Cause you know, he's got darker skin than me. He's not as white passing. And you would see a person of color and think, you know, he gets judged more than I do, like for who he is. And it's why, honestly, he was in jail for so long, like why he was in prison. It's like, cause you know what? He's a Muslim man. Like he ain't, after 9/11, that's a wrap, you know, like he never had a chance, but like, he's a good person. Like he understands these values and he actually applies them to his life. Unlike me, who I'm like, I kind of get it, but I'm also like still kind of trash. Like, but
right,
you know, like you would look at me and be like, she's got it together. She has a job. But it's like, I don't consider myself as good of a human being as my brother, who like went to prison and had to find his way back to it. Like, I actually think he has better morals than me, which is,
I mean, I think a lot of people that, I mean, actually, I don't want to speculate to that degree, but I've heard that people in prison kind of find religion again, or like have something to hold on to through religion. And whether or not they, it's again like a coping mechanism or something for just to help them through like a really hard time. There is something to be said about finding it and like having it kind of help you out of a tough place. And I think for that reason, as much as I hated religion for so long, and I still kind of have that in the back of my head of like really despising religion, I remember that it really helps people. And I look at my grandparents and they're just like kind old Muslim people, and they just use it as like a therapy. Like it's truly like, I can't judge that. I might have a complicated relationship with religion and I might have a little chip about it, but I can't judge it if it's being used well. You know, if it's being used for someone's own personal development and happiness, I can't judge that. But what I take issue with is more like this bigger idea of like scamming people and like using it to justify violence and hate and all that stuff. That's where I take issue. And we just have to kind of reconcile that those are very different things. And it's just about the person that everyone's individual. Just like Anna's saying, her brother's an individual case. You wouldn't look at him and be like, he's a God-fearing man. You know what I mean? Mm-mm. But like, you never know.
He is surreal.
Yeah. you know, I think both of these books, I'm not as familiar with the Quran as I am the Bible.
Check it out, Steve. That could be your next thing.
If you think I'm not going to get into it, I'm going to get into it, like at some point. I love this shit.
What if we convert Steve? I'm kidding.
The only reason why because I've thought about all these things. I've really thought about converting to Judaism because I just like it so much.
Yeah.
And I like their stance on who God is, and they don't have no relationship, and it's basically he could do whatever the fuck he wants. That if there is a God, I believe that. But if you can take out the idea of these two books being perfect, then there's a lot of really good shit in them.
Yeah.
So like, I grew up with the Bible. I know the Bible really well. And if it was a family member, it'd be like, oh, he's mostly like really great. And, but
he's mostly really great.
Yeah. He's mostly really great. But these few things, like, watch out for, like, that's kind of terrible. So I'd keep my eye on him. So I'm interested to explore the Bible like that too. And to go back and figure out like, okay, what ways, because that it is pretty much how I conduct myself still. I believe very much in personal responsibility. You know, I stopped drinking almost 2 years ago now, and I'm so glad to me that began to feel like sin to me, and I couldn't shake that.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm like,
interesting.
Dude, you could like totally like, I'm accountable. Like you can count on me.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to fuck up in a bunch of different ways that I used to fuck up. I'm not going to have sex with anybody. And that I'm taking advantage of in any way, emotionally or anything. So all of the things I do, I really do believe if there is a God or that thing I call the Holy Spirit, I do believe it leads my life. And especially since I quit drinking, I'm doing pretty good for the most part.
That's good.
I mean, I'm proud of you. I mean, we never met, but it makes me proud.
It's a journey. It was a journey. But yeah, I'm glad that I don't do it anymore. I'll never do it again. Although it's been rough in the pandemic. There are times when I look at Julie, I'm like, shouldn't we just get a couple martinis right now? You know, a couple martinis. And she's like, no, you moron. And I'm like, okay.
I've been there. Like, I stopped drinking for the most part because like I am a monster after a certain drink. But like, I wouldn't say I'm like an alcoholic because I don't crave alcohol. But it's more like when I'm drinking it, like when I get into it past a certain level, then I can't stop. And it's like, that's the problem. Then I'm like falling off a roof and everyone's like, when did you get on the roof? You know, but like, I like have bought some wine and I like sip on a glass or two of wine on like Fridays are my wine nights. Been drinking a lot of wine on Fridays, but like, it's nice to be like, I can have a bottle and that's it. That's a wrap for me. And that's usually, man, does it. It toasts me up in that perfect place where I'm like, yeah, whatever. The world is what it is, and I'll get through it.
I think maybe we all relate to this idea of being like an all or nothing, because I don't drink either, and I haven't drank for a very long time. But it's because of that same reason. Like, I didn't have a good way of stopping myself in college. Like, I didn't know how to drink well, and I can't just drink a little bit now. I would have to like really fuck myself up. But I don't know. I think we're better off trying to understand our limits, and whether that's with alcohol or with anything else, I don't know. It's an interesting discussion. But what's really interesting is that we've spent an hour talking to you, Steve, and we didn't even really touch on your comedy. We didn't even get there.
I wanted to talk about sexuality with you, because you have like my favorite views on sexuality. I love my favorite thing is when you come for Jack O'Brien on Daily Zeitgeist and you just watch Jack be like, oh my God, Steve finds me attractive.
Give me a little recap before we end this.
Well, Steve just, you know, he points out that he finds Jack attractive and like he's like a Kennedy and all this stuff. And Jack just, you know, because Jack is like cis white male is like, oh. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, man. I want to see him in some. I want to see those thighs. Yeah. Can you imagine Jack's thighs?
And some little shorts. I've never thought of Jack's thighs. Oh my God. Yeah, I will never golden, be the same.
Little blonde hairs, like saline and shit.
Golden or white. Like, they're probably just like they haven't seen the sun. I've never seen his thighs. Does he have thighs?
He's golden. Yeah. I'm sure he does.
I'll see that fool up out on Cape Cod. You know what I'm talking about? Let's
actually,
do it, Jack.
Actually, yeah, you're right.
He's more of a Ocean City. His family vacations in Ocean City, Maryland. That's their spot.
Yeah, I mean, that pans out. I could smell money on that guy from 3 miles away. Are you kidding me?
Actually, maybe it's not Ocean City. It might actually be the Jersey Shore, but like the nicer part of the Jersey Shore.
No,
I don't know.
No, he's saying we're all thinking. Right. Steve is saying what I've thought from day one.
No,
3 miles.
Yeah, you know, I will say this. I know we got to go, but it is interesting. I am queer. I haven't had sex with a guy since I've been sober. Mm. So I'm very interested to do that at some point now. But the pandemic, man, it's just the wrong time for it.
Honestly, you're going to have to come back on and talk about all of this, because I'm also queer and I would love to talk to you about, like, I don't know, that whole fucking journey for you, but next time.
Oh, that's really interesting shit. So yeah, that's cool.
I'm fascinated by that. I love talking about sex and sexuality. It's my favorite topic, but I hate that we're gonna have to do that next time, because I want to talk about it now. But until then, where can our lovely audience find you on the internet, Steve?
Yes.
Find me at Big Hearn on Twitter, Hernia on Instagram. Movie podcast is Views from the Vista. God podcast is Who's Your God with Amy Miller. And then my horny news podcast is called The Male Gaze with Brody Reed, Alan Strickland Williams, and Zed Cutsinger.
Nice. Yeah. Brody Reed, also previous guest of the pod. Love Brody.
Yes.
But anyway, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. You can follow us at Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohero on Instagram and Shirohero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosey on Twitter.
And I'm not kidding. I do want you to come back and talk all about sex and sexuality with us. I think that'll be really fun.
Anytime.
Cool. Anything else, Anna?
Well, stay Steve.
Stay Steve.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.